was at a wedding recently, and somebody had a daughter or has a daughter who's a tween who really wants to watch a scary movie, but they get really scared really easily. So the parent was asking if we had any recommendations for not too scary movies. And I was thinking Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark
Scary
might
Stories to
be.
Tell in the Dark ha is, I think, would be like the best first time horror movie for someone to watch. Because PG-13, it has intense scenes, but you can easily fast forward through them and you won't lose any of the plot. I think that is the best first time horror movie that anyone could ever watch is Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
That was what I suggested too. I think the book is scarier than the movie.
Yes, the
Those
book.
pictures are terrifying.
Especially the story Harold. The story Harold is way scarier in the book than it is in the movie. Well, I read those books, I'm pretty sure, when I was around for Tia's age, and I don't know why we were allowed to read them.
I would say Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, but then again, I get scared so easily, and I watched it, and I had nightmares for like a month or two. Because they, like, the bad guys have these, like, wide eyes and they freak me out.
That's
I wasn't
fair.
scared by the monsters, though, because, like, they're so unrealistic. They're obviously CGI, but, like, the wide eyes just freaked me out. Just like with monsters, you know they're not real, but with humans, how can you know? Because humans are real.
They
Some
are.
other good first-time horror movies that I've read, wow, that I've seen. Got books on the brain or Lights Out is pretty good for a first-time horror movie. And Insidious, the first one, is actually
That's not too
PG-13.
scary.
I don't think so. I watched it with my parents and it's pretty normal paranormal horror movie fare. At least the first movie is.
I wonder if this daughter would consider things like Ghostbusters a scary movie. Because I feel like Ghostbusters or Little Shop of Horrors, they're a little creepy.
Little Shop of Horrors would be perfect.
I was terrified of that as a child, but I was like six, so
I watched it. I got
or
like
like
halfway through
Gremlins.
it. I got halfway through, but then I was watching a bunch of scary stuff at once, so I stopped and forgot about it. My dad saw the play, and it's the opposite of the movie. Instead of having a good ending, the dude throws himself into the plant, and unlike the movie, he doesn't save the girl. He gets eaten. And then my dad said that, like, at the ending, these vines would literally drop down the ceiling, like, onto your head. And
That's
then
cool.
everyone would, like, scream because it is so unexpected.
Okay, I'm looking at actually PG-13 horror movies online because I cannot remember which one of the ones I've actually watched are PG-13. And there's one called Tremors, which was made in 1990 and isn't that scary, but it is pretty good.
I have a vague recollection of that.
It turns out both The Grudge and The Ring are PG-13, which I am
Whoa,
shocked
whoa.
by, but those are not first-time horror
They're not
movies.
first time.
Cloverfield is good if you like found footage and also like sci-fi elements, because that is definitely more sci-fi and found footage than horror. And it was actually one of the first big found footage horror films. So Cloverfield is definitely, it's super good. It's super good. I love Cloverfield, the original Cloverfield, not 10 Cloverfield Lane. And The Village is an M. Night Shyamalan movie, which is also not that scary, and is would also be a good like introduction to horror because it really isn't that scary. And it'd be interesting to see if she could guess the twist at the end, because I guessed the twist at the end of The Village. I was upset by the twist at the end of The Village because it was so predictable, but you know. That is my list of recommendations for first-time horror movies, but definitely Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I thought that was a good pick. Somebody was like, maybe the Fear Street movie. And I was like, no, that's so
No, no,
much
no, no.
scarier.
No. Same thing with like anything with Creepshow. A lot of people seem to think Creepshow is for children, and it is not. It is not for children.
I'm interested in this new series, The Midnight Club.
I've
It's a
seen
new Netflix series.
ads for that.
I haven't seen it yet, but I think that seems like a fun, possibly early scary. It's definitely geared towards teens. And I think it was based on a Christopher Pike book. I thought I saw that somewhere, which I don't know if you all know Christopher Pike, But when I was your, well, I guess more like George's age, when I was George's age, Christopher Pike was like him and like R.L. Stine pre-Goosebumps. Those were like two of the major like scary story writers for tweens. And I read so many of those books. I don't remember if I read Midnight Club. It may have come out a little bit later than when I would have read it, because I think I read those more like early middle school. But I've kind of wanted to like go back and read one of those old horror books that I read when I was a tween. See if they're still any good. I don't know if they were any good when I read them, but I liked them. But anyways, cool. Thanks for some more suggestions.
Yeah, the first horror movies I ever watched were paranormal horror movies, and they kind of follow a pretty predictable formula. So once you watch like a few of those, you're kind of ready to like start moving up. I'm pretty sure the first horror movie I ever watched was a I think it was The Conjuring, actually, which and all those movies follow the same kind of formula.
Fun, fun. Fatia, did you have anything you wanted to share that you're excited for?
I'm like really excited about my birthday.
Oh, yeah, it is soon. Good to know. We'll have to wish you a happy birthday on the next show. I'm excited for the Ghostly Gallop, which is Sunday, October 30th. And there's a kids 1 mile fun run. And we're hoping like all of the kids in the Hudson area sign up. We know not all of the kids will sign up, but we hope everybody will register for that. Because every kid that registers will get their own personal bib with like their name on it. So they can run with their name on them. And there's going to be a costume contest, and it's just a really fun day. And we're really excited. It's in person this year. It's been virtual the past 2 years, but this is the 22nd running of the Ghostly Gallop, including the virtual ones.
Yay.
And so there's a 5K for adults and teens, and I guess kids could run it too if they want. And we've had some parents that like run it with a stroller, so like babies can participate or.
I'm always impressed when I see people run with strollers. Like, you're already that far. You're gonna push the stroller too. Like, I could never.
But yeah, so people can check out the Ghostly Gallop at ghostlygallop.info for information about the event, and hope to see some people out there. It's a fun community event.
Yay.
Oh, and yeah, so there's a costume contest, and it's really fun to see people in costume running.
At the Opera House?
No, this is for the Ghostly Gallop.
Oh,
There is
cool.
all of the
Well,
like Halloween activities later that afternoon on the same day.
I've done the Opera House one a few times. I didn't win, but it's really fun.
Well, maybe you could enter two costume contests in the same day. You could go to the Ghostly Gallop in the morning.
Ooh, this year I'm gonna be a gumball machine. No one's
Oh,
too hot.
yeah, that's
And I
awesome.
won't tell you how I'm gonna do it.
I'm setting up my whole house to be like that house this
Oh,
Halloween.
yeah.
Yeah, I've got new
Yes.
decorations. I love once you're over 18, that's what you do. That's what I do. I need to be that house. So I've got new decorations. I'm planning how to set them all up. I always make a giant spider web over my
Nice.
railing. We trick or treat out of our garage, not our door, because we have stairs and we're always worried about people falling
Yeah.
up them. So we set up in our garage, and I'm wearing a ghost face costume from Scream, and
Cool.
it's great. It's gonna be awesome. I'm gonna scare some kids.
All right. Well, on that note, we gotta say goodbye for today. But we hope everyone out there listening has a great
Has a
week
great week
filled with
filled with lots of
quality.
books.
We'll be back next week
Next week
to talk
to
about
talk
more
about
book.
more books.
Until
Until
then,
then, happy
happy reading.
reading. Bye.
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 Hi, I'm Shashamizan from Hudson. You are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Mary Jo Downing of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
And yes, the radio tower has a beating heart. That's the Bad Plus song that's playing behind me. The radio tower has a beating heart. And we're deciding with this WGXC pledge drive whether we can keep our antenna up on that big radio tower that has a beating heart. It's a big, expensive radio tower that has a beating heart. It's a big, expensive radio tower that's most of our costs here at WGXC. We're going to pay to keep the 3,300 watts of community voices full power, full-throated, all the way to Pittsfield, Massachusetts and beyond, all the way into northwestern Connecticut and out into Schoharie County and Delaware County and across northern Ulster and northern Dutchess counties and across most of Albany and most of Rensselaer counties and almost all of Greene and Columbia counties. We need your help to decide if we can keep that antenna on that big tower. We've got to decide if we can renew the lease. We got to decide if we have the community support to keep belting out all sorts of community voices on that big stick. So we need your help. We need your vote in favor of keeping WGXC on the FM frequencies. Please go to wgxc.org/donate or call 518-697-7400 or go online to wgxc.org/donate or make a donation in person at one of the local record stores, the Boom and Bloom shop out on Route 145 on the weekends in East Durham, and then every day Spike's Record Rack in Catskill on Main Street and John Doe Books and Records on Warren Street in Hudson. Stop by in person or go to wgxc.org/donate and make a difference in your community. Vote to keep the WGXC antenna on that big tower. The radio tower has a beating heart from the Bad Plus. We're asking for your beating heart to make a difference in your community with a donation to WGXC during our fall pledge drive. WGXC.org/donate is the place to go to make a difference in your community today.
We've got a pledge drive going on, and we are in need of your support to help renew the lease on our broadcast tower. That tower is a very important factor in our broadcasts. In fact, just using the word broadcast implies that we have a tower. You may not listen to much terrestrial radio at home, but I'll bet you do in your car. We have a very large listenership that tunes us in while they're driving. So in order to keep that going, we need our tower. Help us out. Give us a call. Donate. Go to wgxc.org/donate and become a sustaining member. We would love that.
Now my team way more consolidated. Sweet presidential, that's inauguration. Cause we cooking crack like Ronald Reagan. Chip on my shoulder, boy, I'm not for waiting. Divine timing took a lot of patience. Now it's time for the takeover. All gas and the brakes slower. Took a trip out to Tokyo. Now I'm here in Paris for the layover. Oh, chicken, boy, your day's over. You mad at me cause your pay slower. Better than you a shade though. I was just sleeping on a sofa. Now I ride with a pay chauffeur. Cause I'm way doper. Better stay sober. I paint pictures, you a Crayola. Got a bag, bitch, be laid over. She really asked cause she stay over. I told her that we need to face closure. The smell of money has a great odor. These are things that I prayed over. Sweet Lord, please have mercy. Baby Jesus, please save us. I know I used up my three favors. Back to center like a week later. New car, speed racer. Copper crib, need acres. Most of all, we all need prayer. Karma coming, beware. I don't know where I'm going, but I hope I'm on the right path. Life will hit you with a light jab. Mike Tyson, strike back. You niggas going out, slight sad. Boy, I'm all about my bag. New drip, I grab. I just want to get my life back. Why cry over spilled milk if you still feel I'm the real deal? My shit's bad with no ill will. She'll murk looking like Kill Bill. Loose lips, sink ships, Cameron, pink drip, that is my fashion. I'm not really with the high flashing. It's no helping with my bragging. I penetrated, been the greatest. New house, renovated. I got the juice, you eliminated. Always instigate, handful of y'all, but boy, I'm too clever. That applies all to whoever. I'm just here to pursue pleasure, but I'm going out like you have. Sweet Lord, please have mercy. Baby Jesus, please save us. I know I used up my three favors. Back to center like a week later. New car, speed racer, copper crib, need acres. Most of all, we all need prayer. Karma coming, beware. I don't know where I'm going, but I hope I'm on the right path. Life will hit you with a light jab. Mike Tyson, strike back. You niggas looking going out, slice sad. Boy, I'm all about my bag. New drip, I grab. I just want to get my life back.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Clubhouse Radio. You are listening on WGXC 90.7 FM, broadcasting Catskill, Acre, Hudson. Today we have some guests and we have a great show planned, but we'll get to you right after the local news and weather.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Diane Pinero-Zucker is reporting for the Daily Freeman that the flyers left illegally last week inside a number of Rosendale mailboxes and on car windshields in the New Platts Plaza parking lot directed their recipients via URL codes to White Lives Matter and another Nazi-identified social media website. However, contrary to what the Ulster County Sheriff's Office said last week, the distribution was not limited to a, and I quote, handful, end quote, of Rosendale addresses, and they included an image of Adolf Hitler and are blatantly anti-Semitic. One post on the site to which one flyer links says, and I quote, Nazi just means person not interested in sex with kids or attending urine-themed homosexual orgies until festering boils break out all over your body, end quote. Another flyer linked recipients to a White Lives Matter official site on Telegram. The Southern Poverty Law Center categorizes White Lives Matter as, and I quote, a neo-Nazi group that is growing into a movement as more and more white supremacist groups take up its slogans and tactics, end quote.
New Plants Police Chief Robert Lucchesi said the department had reported the incident to the Anti-Defamation League and the Jewish Federation of Ulster County. David Drimmer of the Jewish Federation of Ulster County and a member of the Ulster County Human Rights Commission said he believes the distribution was the work of James Sheely, KKK Grand Wizard of New York and New Jersey. Deputy County Executive Chris Kelly said Ulster County is, and I quote, forming a task force for preventing and responding to domestic terrorism, end quote. The flyer distribution in Rosendale is under investigation by the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. Ulster County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant Joseph Secudo declined to categorize the flyers as, and I quote, racist or white supremacist, end quote. But his boss, Sheriff Juan Figueroa, called their message, and I quote, despicable, end quote, calling the flyers, and I quote, offensive, end quote. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Mid-Hudson News is reporting the Republican-controlled Dutchess County Legislature on Tuesday, October 11th, voted in favor of a domestic partner registry brought to their attention by Dutchess County Clerk Brad Kendall. The law was proposed two previous times, but never made it through the legislature. Kendall said, and I quote, establishing a registry now would allow those whose long-term relationships have been acknowledged in other jurisdictions to be recognized in their new county of residence. It will also allow partners to participate more fully in joint financial and medical decision-making, end quote. He noted that many partnerships registered in New York City have relocated to Dutchess County. A Democrat minority singled out the two Republicans who voted against the law. In a statement, they said, and I quote, invoking religious rhetoric, Republican legislators Lisa Poloni voted no, saying the law would delegitimize the sanctity of marriage, and Republican legislator Alan Sermon also voted no, saying if you are in a committed relationship, marriage is definitely the best way to go, end quote. Any Dutchess resident aged 18 or older who has been living with their partner for at least 1 year is eligible to apply for the registry. Either or both partners can choose to terminate, even if one does not agree to the termination. New York City, Suffolk, Westchester, Putnam, and Rockland counties, as well as some municipalities in Nassau County, have established similar domestic registries. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Mike Goodwin is reporting for the Times Union. The city of Albany is the top place to live in the state of New York, according to U.S. News and World Report's latest ranking of best places to live in the U.S. overall. Albany ranked 21st in the survey's annual catalog of top American metropolitan areas. U.S. News notes that homes in Albany sell for, and I quote, less than the national median sale price, end quote, and the average income is higher than the national average. The story promotes life on Lark Street, noting the heart of the city's Center Square neighborhood features small businesses, galleries, churches, and I quote, wine shops featuring New York State vintages, end quote. The magazine also highlights Albany's proximity to the Adirondacks and Catskills, as well as its architecture, both its residential brownstones and State Capitol and Empire State Plaza. Albany bested Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo, and New York City in the rankings. Huntsville, Alabama was rated the place best to live in the U.S., followed by Colorado Springs, Colorado, Green Bay, Wisconsin, Boulder, Colorado, and San Jose to round out the top five. Read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button. To become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, October 14th. So close to having a Friday 13th, but you know, we take what we can get. Local early morning temperatures range from 46 degrees in Phoenicia to 52 in Germantown. Regional average soil temperature is 56 degrees. 750 miles away is where you will find the closest chances for snow today in Upper Michigan. The Friday fall foliage forecast, shamelessly stolen from I Love New York, is in Greene County. Foliage is peaking in Windham and should remain so through the weekend, with almost total change in very brilliant red, orange, yellow, and purple leaves. Peak foliage will arrive in the town of Catskill with very brilliant yellow and orange leaves, along with bright touches of red. I can verify that, folks. I was up in the hills recently, and it is looking fantastic. In Ulster County, reports from Kingston predict foliage at midpoint of change with more than 50% transition and bright green, yellow, and orange leaves. Columbia County spotters in Old Chatham are predicting near peak to peak leaves this weekend with up to 80% change and very brilliant ginger, tangerine, canary yellow, paprika, chili. Okay, let's just say it's going to be colorful. Foliage should be around midpoint of change in Hudson, where spotters expect 50% change and average to bright green, yellow, and orange leaves with splashes of red. Okay, rain gets the boot by 9 a.m. A light breeze and descending relative humidity will help things to dry out. A high of 67 is expected to linger for an hour to two after 2 p.m. Overnight, temperatures fall to 42 degrees, then bounce back up to 68 degrees, giving us a beautiful fall Saturday to go check out those leaves. 43 degrees overnight and calm conditions could make for some foggy Sunday morning. Then, mostly sunny skies with a high of 62. Monday, rain returns and we see a high of only 56 degrees. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:03 a.m., high tide at 6:52 a.m., low tide again at 12:54 p.m., and high tide once again at 7:01 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 60 degrees, and the tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 6:03 p.m., sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:02 a.m. Looking way up, we see a passing coronal mass ejection has sparked up enough activity to bring aurora activity down to the northern border of the continental U.S. Solar wind speed is currently 343 kilometers per second at 16 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 57, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate, who are asking for your help keeping the waves rolling. Radio waves, that is. The tower needs tending, so if I'm coming through on old-fashioned radio, please consider becoming one of our sustaining supporters. It's people like you that keep the photons flying, so get jotted down in my book of heroes by heading on over to WGXE.org and hitting that donate button.
Hello, everybody. We are back. That was the news and weather. And today, we are joined by a couple of guests, as well as my lovely engineer here.
Diddy, somebody, hi.
And we are joined by the Prattsville Arts Center. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Well, I am Nancy Barton from the Prattsville Art Center, and I also have two amazing colleagues with me who are part of the Living Archive Project, which we're working on now. This is Christina.
Hello, my name is Christina Hunt Wood, and I am a visual artist and am working with Nancy at the Prattsville Art Center.
And I'm Kathleen Sweeney, a multimedia storyteller who's joining to help facilitate the outreach and get stories woven through this wonderful art center.
And we are also joined from or with another guest from the clubhouse today.
Oh. Hi, this is Roman Rosario.
Hi, Roman.
Hey, Roman.
I'm also here.
Yeah, and today we're just going to be talking about what the Prattsville Art Center is all about. We have a bunch of lovely questions we're going to ask, but before that, I'm kind of getting into the questions. But what is, like, the Prattsville Art Center about? Like, what do you go there and do?
Well, the Prattsville Arts Center was built after a horrible flood, which destroyed most of the town of Prattsville. So most of what we did for the beginning of the project was to build things like that were broken, like cover up dirt floors with wood and make floorboards. And now we have a stage with performance art, and we have a gallery, we have a cafe, and we have a library, and people just come and hang out and have fun and make art. And we have a residency. People come and stay there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, those are a bunch of, like, interesting things. I could ask a bunch of questions about all of them, but I'm a little bit curious. What's your favorite part to do there? Like, if you had to pick a favorite thing.
Well, my favorite thing at the moment is our musical staircase. We did a project 2 years ago with people from New Orleans called New Orleans Airlift, and they made a staircase that you can play music on. So it has drums underneath the steps and loopers, and then all of the stair rails are chimes that they made from old found wood and found pipes. And so you can play the staircase and record it and make a multi-track recording right there on the stairs.
That's super cool. Out of all the places I could see a band perform, a staircase is not one of them. And I just think that's super neat.
Yeah. Now we're just trying to afford heat for the space so we can have bands perform in the winter.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, what about you guys? Do you guys have any favorite things to do there?
So this is Christina. I'm fairly new to the Prattsville Art Center community, but the thing that I love to do is go in and meet the people who come in for coffee, the people who are coming in to intern and get to know the community. I live about 40 minutes from Prattsville in Delhi, which is kind of like on the other side of the planet from here, it seems. But yeah, and I mean, Nancy and I have collaborated on like curating a show together, an art show, which was really cool.
It had Christina's artwork in it.
Yeah, it had my artwork and a few other artists, and it was like really kind of a cool installation.
Yeah, it was about hoarding.
So
collecting and hoarding.
Yeah, you want to explain that piece a little bit?
Sure. So the theme was about archiving, sort of like creating archives of your life and how people do it in different ways. Some people are collecting. There was one artist who the installation was about books that he had collected. And so there were like hundreds of books that he had collected that were actually part of his own collection that were stacked in piles. And you walked through and they were really like kind of a little overwhelming, taking up the space. And
his landlord is trying to evict him because he has too many books.
Yes. So it became art, you know, his story. And my work featured in it, like I collect beer cans from ditches throughout rural spaces in this area, and I kind of take them apart and turn them into like works of art. And so my work was about collecting, you know, trash and sort of transforming it and giving it new meaning. And then there were other artists that were like, there was another artist who just had this sort of need to make art and just kind of like made it. I mean, how would you describe?
Wait, who? Tom Zinwala makes art from the streets. He collects trash on the streets, and he's at some points in his life has lived on the streets, so it's really an interesting collection of things that he has.
Yeah, I find that super cool. It's like recycling.
Exactly.
It's like a different type of recycling, though, not like just reusing the materials, but like giving the materials life and watching it like build upon itself. So I think that's super cool.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention about Christina's work is that a lot of her pieces, they're the kind of cans that people throw out of mm-hmm. their cars when they're driving. So they're beer cans usually. And so she uses them to map the river valleys where she's making the piece. So she not only collects the trash from the area, but she kind of like points out like that people are throwing this stuff out at that area. And it kind of is a sort of a counter power move to say, like, I see you doing that.
Yeah, I mean, pollution is definitely a problem, and I think that's such a unique, like, way to try to fight it, and I think that's mm-hmm. awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. So, our last lovely guest, I'm a little curious, what's your favorite thing to do there?
Well, Nancy makes a mean cortado.
I mean, I'm telling you, the first meeting we had out in the garden, she said, would you like any kind of coffee? I'm like, a cortado? Do you really make a good one? She brought me this incredible cortado that made the brainstorm go to the uber level of clarity and wonderfulness.
And can you tell us what a cortado is, for anyone who might not know?
A cortado, as I understand it, is two shots of espresso with a little dabble of milk that gets decorated on the top.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds really
And
good.
I don't think you mentioned this, but they're roasting the beans.
Oh yeah, we roast our own coffee.
It's amazing.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And this weekend they're going to have a special cooking event, right?
Yes, tomorrow we're having mochi waffles.
Oh, wow.
With red bean paste and sesame and all kinds of ginger and it will be fun.
Yeah, the center does it all. There's like everything you can look for is all happening there.
But what's cool about Christina's work, too, is that there's so many different story threads going on. There's the piece of collecting. There's the piece of the mapping. And then decoding, when you first come in, you see, wow, that's kind of cool. It's like scintillating and shimmery metal. But wait, there's a map in there. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting, multi-layered way to approach.
And the Bud Light makes the blue.
Yeah,
the water.
Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I was like, which can is dark blue?
What has you committed to, like, your stories, like putting out stories?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I'm gonna answer that. Since you're talking about my art, I'm gonna like transition into and you ask that question. So my work is my story. Like, it's talking to my community and about the place that I live in, about the way people express their like power moves, their microaggressions through like these small things that kind of, when you look at the collective impact of everything, like there's actually kind of a phenomenon happening. So the beer can for me is sort of a stand-in for like a microaggression that could be racial, that could be whatever kind of microaggression. And that, like, as I collect these and I transform them and turn them into something normalized, like a piece of artwork, that they, it shows how, like, microaggressions kind of get normalized in society. So yeah. Wow. So I tell my story about my experiences growing up in the country I'm African-American woman. So growing up in the space that's very white and sort of experiencing that world.
So I have a question.
Sure.
You are, just for clarification, you were comparing like littering to microaggressions.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. How did you come up with that idea? No, I'm genuinely curious. How you made that correlation?
Yeah, so it was an organic process, and it started with, in my community, let's say like 2015, 2016, I started noticing a lot of Confederate flags popping up around my community and, you know, off the backs of trucks. Off the backs of trucks and off houses and so I saw a lot of these Confederate flags popping up, and then I started thinking about, at first I was like really mad and sad and angry, and I would communicate to friends and family members that were white, and they didn't quite understand the impact of the flag on me as a black person, that it was like a threat, you know, it was actually like more powerful than what they were giving it credit. Mm-hmm. And so the work that I was making right after that was very like personal and emotional and expressive, and then I was trying to figure out a way to communicate how sort of normalizing aggression and those kinds of like symbols or smaller symbols, the way language keeps pushing power structures forward. Mm-hmm. I started thinking a lot about that, and then I wanted to find something that represented the place that I live in, that is kind of like, is doing it to the land, is like something that everybody could kind of relate to in some way that mm-hmm. is from there. And I was like, oh, the beer can on the side of the road. Like, we overlook it, we kind of normalize it, but it really is a cultural thing where people, you know, they get out of work or something, they say, I'm not going to follow the laws. I can, you know, I'll have a beer while I'm driving if I want to. Nobody can tell me what to do. And then they chuck the beer can out the window on their way home. They don't want to get pulled over. They don't want somebody to find the can in their truck.
Yeah.
And when you look at the collect, the collection of those beer cans on a road. It's like there's a story there about more than just beer cans.
Maybe this is a reach, but it's sort of interesting how they seem to almost be portraying like a sort of defiance.
No, it's not a reach.
Even though it's just ironic because the systems that we live in actually like work to their benefit, and yet they are so defiant about the way that they work.
So it's an aggression also to the environment, yes. To the earth, and yeah. To themselves, right?
Right.
So that's the inadvertent piece that I think Roman was pointing to, is that they're actually hurting themselves with these microaggressions that are almost like cutting themselves.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I do think, I think it's absolutely correct that there's, because a lot of the people that are doing this act, this kind of rebellion against all these other things, are the same people that love that land, that farm that land, that fish on that land, that go hunting, and yet,
grew up on it.
Yeah, they grew up on it, and right, and it, and it's about bigger picture stuff, but they're gonna, you know, anyway. So I make the artwork, and hoping that the artwork also helps us all, like even if we're not the ones throwing the beer cans into the ditches, like think about the way that small aggressions can add up.
Yeah, and I find that like super interesting and empowering how you can just tell that story through art and how much art relates to your story. And it's pretty much a language you're using, and I find that really, really cool.
Yeah, I think
thank you. That's a nice comment.
Will relate to your pieces when they see them. I mean, I've never seen them, but I can just imagine the kinds of emotions that that might stir up for some people.
Yeah, I get really interesting responses for sure. Like people,
I imagine.
Yeah, people have memories of like my grandmother. I remember the beer cans. Yeah, my grandmother used to go pick up the beer cans every Sunday, and so sometimes it just sparks that kind of their own storytelling, and then and also being like, oh yeah, like this is bigger than just
a
couple beer cans. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like just a whole being more than the sum of its parts.
Right.
Yeah. I find that super cool. Mm-hmm. So another question I wanted to ask everybody is like, what do you think you bring from your past to the place, to the art center?
Well, I can talk to that. So when I was a kid, I had kind of a bad childhood. My brother died. My parents were depressed. They never talked to me. And I didn't really fit in any of the schools that I went to. And so I was really, really isolated and didn't feel like there was ever around anybody who was like me. And so then at a certain point, I started taking classes at this art center. And it just really saved my life. You know, I was really like completely isolated, and I finally met people who were similar to me and had, you know, that kind of, you know, understanding, like you didn't feel like you were from the moon so much. And so when I made mostly photographs, I used to do a lot of projects with people, like, you know, my mother wanted to be an opera singer, so I made a project with her, so as if she had been an opera singer, and I got her singing lessons, and then we performed all over the country. And so it was like something she couldn't do in real life, but she could do it in art. So art has that kind of possibility, I think, to make something possible that doesn't have, you know, you don't have to go through all of the hoops that you do in like the rest of the world. And when I started the Art Center, I wanted to make a place where that could happen for other people.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of actual parallels between the Art Center and Clubhouse. Like, they're both outlets for people who might be seen as different or just want a space to make their own. And I think that's awesome. And I think, like, our two organizations have a lot of common.
Yeah, well, you know, Phoebes worked at the Art Center before she came here. And I don't know if you knew Maggie, who's now Mateo, also was working here after working at the Art Center.
I actually didn't know that, but I mean, I can see it. It makes sense, you know what I mean? Like, going from one place to another, especially with, we hold a lot of the same ideals, so I could see that.
Yeah,
for sure.
I
didn't know that, though. That's,
well, it was one of the reasons I wanted to bring this project to this space. To, you know, because I thought there would be this common ground.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, this is just really fascinating. Your guys' art center is so cool, and For anybody who's just tuning in, you are listening to 90.7 FM. This is Clubhouse Radio specifically. And I think we're going to continue this conversation after a song and the weather. Or news update, my bad. But we'll see you guys in a little bit.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC news update. New York State of Politics reports that on October 13th, lawyers for Attorney General Letitia James filed a motion for a preliminary injunction to stop Donald Trump's company from selling or transferring assets without court approval. Lawyers for James say that shortly before she filed a lawsuit against the Republican in September, Trump incorporated a new company in Delaware named Trump Organization LLC in an effort to avert scrutiny. Lawyers for James wrote in their October 13th court filing, and I quote, "Beyond just the continuation of its prior fraud, the Trump Organization now appears to be taking steps to restructure its business to avoid existing responsibilities under New York law," end quote. Trump's attorney, Alina Haba, said no court oversight is necessary. Haba said, and I quote, "We have repeatedly provided assurance in writing that Trump Organization has no intention of doing anything improper. This is simply another stunt which Ms. James hopes will aid her failing political campaign," end quote. In the lawsuit James filed last month, James's office accused Trump of regularly misleading banks and others about how much assets, such as his golf courses and other real estates, were worth. You can read the full story at New York State of Politics. The Troy Record reports about Albany County's proposed $768.8 million budget for next year. That is a proposed 5.9% increase over last year's budget. Because of new construction and increased valuations on existing real estate, the effective tax rate would be $317 per $1,000 next year, down from $345 per $1,000 this year. McCoy said in a press release, and I quote, "As families continue to struggle with historically high inflation, and as the Federal Reserve looks to continue raising interest rates, we must be prepared for a possible economic downturn in the future. That's why I'm proud to present another fiscally responsible budget plan that holds the line on taxes now for the 10th year in a row without making cuts to our workforce or the innovative programs and services that our residents rely on each day," end quote. Now the proposed budget will move through the legislature, beginning with the Audit and Finance Committee annual review of the budget, beginning at 5:30 p.m. on October 19th. Read the full story in the Troy Record. Paul Kirby is reporting for the Daily Freeman that Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corporation's electric supply prices are four times higher than they were 4 months ago. The current price per kilowatt hour from Central Hudson is now 16.93 cents. In June, the cost was 4.18 cents per kilowatt hour. But Central Hudson's natural gas prices have gone down. On October 3rd, Central Hudson was charging 78.8 cents per 100 cubic feet, down from 97.8 cents per 100 cubic feet. The utility said, and I quote, "A number of international, national, and regional forces continue to create volatility from month to month within the energy supply markets," end quote. Anthony Campagnori, Senior Vice President of Customer Services and Gas Operations, said, and I quote, "We understand rising supply prices can create confusion and stress around utility bills for our customers, and we are working closely with our regulators to find ways to keep them as low as possible," end quote. Central Hudson is under investigation by the Public Service Commission and a Senate committee for billing practices and complaints about customer bills. And you can read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Your tongue like my bad habit. Would you mind if I tried to make a pass at it? Now you're not too good for me, my dear. Funny you come back to me, my dear. It's okay, things happen for reasons that I can't ignore. Carry on, but I'm not hiding. You grabbing me hard, 'cause you know what you found is biscuits, is gravy bag.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Clubhouse Radio. We are broadcasting live on 90.7 FM, Catskill Acre Hudson. And this is Clubhouse Radio, and we're interviewing the Prattsville Heart Center. And one of our members here at Clubhouse Radio had a very interesting question that we talked about on break. Would you like to ask that?
Yes. This is Roman speaking. I just wanted to ask the other artists in the room, as a young aspiring artist who has not set foot into the industry really at all yet, what was it like getting into the stream? Do you feel like you've made a name for yourself? How did you go about doing that? How did you go about being
seen?
I'm
the oldest person here, so I could say. But things change also by generations. I think things are very different now. But I feel like I have made a name and also lost a name and then remade a name. And that's a big part of it. You know, when I first started, I was friends with a lot of artists in Los Angeles, and there was an art fair, and a dealer from New York came, and he was a very eccentric dealer, Colin DeLand.
What is a dealer?
He is a person who runs the art gallery, and a commercial gallery tries to sell work, whereas a nonprofit space doesn't necessarily sell work, but they can.
But they promote.
Yeah, they just, you know, like what I have now is a nonprofit, and so I just hold space for people to do what they want to do, and it doesn't matter if they make money for me. Okay. So anyway, I had my first show in New York, and it was a huge smash, and I got, like, all the magazines, and it was just a big deal, and I was like, wow, this is really easy. And then, you know, like, the MoMA took some of the pieces and showed them, and, you know, I was like, oh, look, here I am at my MoMA opening.
MoMA?
Yeah.
What is that?
The Museum of Modern Art.
Oh, right.
So then I made another piece with my friend Mike, and it totally upset everyone. And then I lost my gallery, and I lost all kinds of things. And that happens a lot. You know, people are, like, really, like, they like one thing, they don't like another thing. So,
ask what the piece of work was that offended everybody?
Well, it was a whole show. It was a solo show, and I collaborated with my friend Michael Glass, who was a gay black artist who I had gone to CalArts with. And we used a lot of text in the show, and the show was called Butter Wouldn't Melt in My Mouth, which is an old-fashioned saying that people used to say, like, if you broke something in your house and your mom came home, and you would be like, hi, I'm totally innocent, I didn't do anything. And your mom would say, don't you act like butter wouldn't melt in your mouth. And Mike came from Watts, and that was a thing that his family said. And so we both always felt really different than other people, and always felt like as soon as you start telling people, like, no, really, I'm okay, it's okay, you're already sunk. You know, like, by the time you have to say, like, oh, I did, you know, like, I didn't do anything, then people are already judging you. So the whole show was about that, and people were just really upset by it. You know, I mean, a lot of collectors, you know, don't want to think of themselves as being, like, you know, prejudiced or, you know, not hip and not cool. And I think somehow the show kind of called people out a little bit. Not so much that we intended that, because we mostly took pictures of ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
But I think some of the texts were a little intense, speaking of critical thinking. So it was just too much for people.
Yeah.
I wonder, in what ways do you typically see collectors being prejudiced? Because I don't know any personally.
Well, people who collect art are all different kinds of people. I mean, there's some people that trade art. There's some artists who, you know, become collectors of other friends' art. And then there's people who collect, you know, really expensive big pieces and are really building a collection. And often those people are in a certain percentile of society, like they're very well-to-do. And, you know, sometimes they have maids, and, you know, the people, when you go to their house, the maid isn't treated like everybody in the dinner. You know, everybody at the dinner is one person, and then there's, like, some other people in the kitchen. And, you know, I think that they don't really talk about that. But I remember one story about a famous collector who was also a gallery owner, and people were installing a piece at her house, and they said, oh, we need to go to the supermarket and get some, you know, some supplies. And where's the closest supermarket? And she said, how should I know? Because she had never been herself. You know, but she's, you know, very progressive. She shows a lot of progressive work. But, you know, I think people don't want to, like, put those pieces together.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I would like you to answer next.
Oh, man. So when you asked this during the break, I kind of chuckled and said, have I found my niche?